Today on Real Ghost Stories Online, what happens when you visit a town that feels frozen in time, only to discover something sinister lurking beneath the surface?
This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
Yes, thank you so much for listening. If you have a real ghost story, that's what we do around here. We talk about them, so share yours with us. You can call it in at 855-853-4802. You can write it in at Real Ghost Stories Online. And then if you want to be a premium subscriber, no commercials, advanced episodes, access to the archive, you could do it through Apple Podcasts, try it for 3 days free. You could sign up through patreon.com/realghoststories or at ghostpodcast.com. I'm Carol Hughes, and Kathy Gordon, there's one of our least favorite words in the title of that, lurking.
Lurking. Mm. Lurking and like crouching.
Crouching was the one we had the other day because it was all in one sentence.
I'm real averse to crouching.
Crouching, crawling, lurking, hiding, closet.
Yeah, closet.
I just decided to throw in a noun because we don't love them. So Tony and I were talking about this the other day, but I did want to mention it with you because I was in your old stomping grounds the other day. It was so weird to go to Southeast Kansas and you not be over there.
It is weird, isn't it?
It was weird because the town I went to go to a haunted mortuary, Iola's, what, how far from your
About
old
About 20
town?
Miles.
Yeah, yeah, really close.
North of where I used to live.
Yeah. So we just drove over there and went to the haunted mortuary and turned around and drove back.
But now, I think Iola's a cute town, though.
It's a cute little town.
How's it cute downtown?
It was nice, and that's where the haunted mortuary is.
Mm-hmm.
This is a really strange story. The night before we went, my friend Emily and I went with Luca. Luca's a teenager, and he likes all things paranormal. So the three of us go over there. So Emily and I are talking to our friend Brandon, who owns the theater I write for. So we say we're going to this haunted mortuary and in Iola. And he looks at us really weird and he goes, "This is going to be a random story," but proceeds to tell us about a time when he was really young, like 5 years old, and his family from Iola came, I guess, to Wichita. I'm not sure if that's where he was living.
Oh, he has family in Iola.
Yes.
Okay.
This is a pretty dark story, though. So this happened in the 80s or not, maybe 90s. I'm trying to think how old Brandon is. And so he was young, like 5 years old. Okay. And the family comes over to visit. It was some cousins. There's five cousins and two adults. So they came over and they hung out. And Brandon said that he really remembered it because he never had cousins his own age. And so things like that didn't happen very often. And they left that day. And within blocks of the leaving his house, they were hit by a train. And all of them died.
Oh, my God.
And they owned the funeral home that we went to go visit.
Are you kidding me?
I am not kidding you. I am not. So the dad, who owned the funeral home at that time, he stayed there, and the oldest daughter stayed. She was going to go and then changed her mind. And so everybody else died in the accident. And so it was interesting because we did talk about that with the woman who owns the mortuary now. And it's not a functioning mortuary. It's just a paranormal building.
What is it now?
It's called Sleeper Mortuary. And the original people who owned it were the Sleeper family.
Oh, okay.
And so that's hence the Sleeper Mortuary. Okay. And so then Brandon's family bought it at some point, his relatives. And so, you know, could, like, there have been reports of hearing children, laughter, things like that. Now, you know, so for her, it's kind of an interesting, you know, well, I can't think of the word I want, but kind of a place to be, because you don't want to be saying, "Oh, this tragic thing happened and their ghosts are here." Because right. they're, you know, she still has family because Brandon's only like in his early 40s, late 30s.
Yeah.
So, you know, so the sister is around that age. You know, she might be older, you know, maybe she's in her 50s, but she still lives in that area. So, you know, it's like that. I've talked to several people over the years who, you know, they think they know who's haunting it, but they also have living relatives. So you right. want to respect them. But this thing did happen. It's part of the history of this building.
Yeah.
So it was really, it was an interesting place to go. And so we talk about that a little in the episode on the Grave Talks, which I think is probably posted by the time this one posts. But okay. But it was really interesting. And so we went all over the place. We went into the room where they made flowers, which was really odd. You would have appreciated it because it's like, this is not right. But they must have built like a two-story room because the ceilings were super, super high. And they like built this room up about halfway. So there's a staircase and then there's a room that the ceiling maybe is 6 feet tall.
Weird.
It's really low. And that's where they prepared all the flowers. So, you know, that wasn't original. Couldn't have been. But it was done a long time ago because the woodwork is super old.
Well, and normally I think these days most flowers come in from
and
forests.
Back then they did the flowers there. But they have a lot of activity in that room. So that's the room we went and sat in and turned all the lights out and put out some cat balls. At one point I got a weird vibe. Like, my heart started racing like it does. So I got the weird vibes. I'll be interested when I go through the audio, which I have not done yet, and listen to all the audio, because I just left the recorder running.
Okay.
So we'll see. But isn't that an interesting story? Like, oh, by the way, the night before we're going to go, Brandon's got this story.
Well, and what a weird thing that you would mention it to that person.
Mm-hmm.
Of all people in the world.
I know, because I was like, we're going to a haunted mortuary tomorrow. It's like, where is it? We go, Iola, Kansas. And he's like, how many mortuaries do you think could be there? I'm like, well, probably one that's working now. And this looks like an old one that's just, it's used for paranormal investigations.
And even if he'd have had a tragic accident happen to a family from Iola, the fact that they were the mortuary people.
Exactly.
Is so weird.
So it was interesting to hear that story from him Friday night and then Saturday morning go there. And I tell the woman who owns it, Tori, the story. And she's like, oh, yeah, absolutely that happened.
Wow.
So to hear the same story, tragic story, with two different people's tellings of it was really interesting.
Okay, so the Tori, the woman who is there, has she had anything specifically happen to her?
Oh, yeah, she's had lots of experiences there.
Give me one.
Well, the big one was they were all there looking at the building with the realtor, and they were, you know, it's not like you can just go, I mean, you can. I'm looking for a haunted building. But she'd been looking one for a while, and so she went in to tour the building, and everybody heard what sounded like a man go, like a deep male sigh, and everybody stopped and turned around to see who it was, because it was like right behind them, and nobody was there. And what was interesting, because she said she hears a man's voice all the time, and Tony and I talked about this the other day, that I was in the basement.
Me too.
And it was me, Tori, and Luca. We were all together. And then behind us was Emily and Tori's daughter. And so they were quite a ways behind us. It's a big, big basement. And it's creepy because it's got all kinds of things from funeral home down there.
Oh, yeah.
And I heard a man's voice. So I turned around to see who had just joined us in the basement because I thought it was kind of weird. But, I mean, it's not my building. She might have been expecting somebody. So I turned around to see who it was, and there was no man.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I thought that was kind of interesting. So
when it's so real that you turn around and you're not even scared, You just turn around to see who it is.
Exactly. Did not scare me. I just turned around thinking there was a guy behind us. So that was interesting because she had said that story about the man's voice. She's heard it other times. And then we're in the basement. And this is 45 minutes later. I'm not thinking anything about man's voices at that point. I'm just like looking at where they displayed the urns. And this was a system for the caskets. And so I'm kind of wrapped up in what she's talking about. And then it's
sure.
Like, yeah. So it was pretty interesting. It was interesting.
Okay. So we can get more of that then on the grave talks.
Uh-huh. And okay. So when I come visit you in a month, I'll have to bring the recorder. Maybe we can find some haunted places in Oregon.
That's my plan. Yeah.
That'd be so fun. So, so, so fun. So we've got this story today that is kind of interesting because it starts out, "Hello, Real Ghost Stories Online team. Here is a ghost story that I feel is worthy of the airwaves. Let me know if it makes the cut." Hey, it's going to make the cut. We're doing it. And then it says, "I present to you a haunting in Hamilton Fort." And then in parentheses, "a very true story." And then in another set of parentheses, "the name had been changed to protect the identities of those I care about."
Okay.
It starts out, "When I was 18, I first met the Elred family. It was the summer of 1993, and my girlfriend, Sapphire, invited me on a trip to visit her sister, Carly. Carly had moved to a small community outside of Cedar City, Utah, and we were all excited to see how she was settling in. For me, this trip was more than just a visit. It felt like a much-needed escape. High school had been suffocating, and I finally had a chance to breathe after years of struggle. We pulled into Hamilton Fort late in the afternoon. The place felt frozen in time. Rows of nearly identical modular homes perched on brick basements, each one near a carbon copy of its neighbor. As we unpacked, I expected the usual awkwardness of meeting extended family. What I didn't expect was an unsettling atmosphere, almost like a thick, invisible fog clinging to everything. Meeting the Elred family was not the warm, friendly experience I had imagined. Their brand of religion felt more like rigid control than comforting faith. That's a good way to put it. There, you know what I'm talking about? There are rigid religions mm-hmm. that are like that. That's a good way to put that. It quickly became clear they lived under an iron-fisted belief system that seeped into every aspect of their daily life. Carly and her cousin Amy, both only 16, had suffered the most under these strict rules. Carly confided that the Elreds held nightly prayer circles in their dimly lit basement, but these gatherings felt more like seances than simple worship. The chanting left Carly and Amy feeling entranced, even disoriented. She said these sessions didn't invite faith. They invited something else entirely, spirits, entities lurking in the shadows, some merely watching, others openly malevolent. I was intrigued, but skeptical. Although I was open to the paranormal, her story seemed extreme. I brushed it off as overactive imagination, a product of living in such an oppressive environment. That was my first mistake. By the end of the night, I learned just how wrong I was. I was assigned to a bedroom at the front of the house, sharing it with Sapphire's 13-year-old brother. Our room was right beside the front entrance, which had two layers of security, a heavy iron barred door with an iron mesh screen and a regular door behind it. The back door was set up the same way. It was unusual. Earlier that day, Carly had mentioned that most neighbors in Hamilton Fort kept their doors unlocked. Everyone watched out for one another, so I found it odd that the Elred's home was all locked up like a fortress. When I jokingly asked Carly why, she only smiled and changed the subject, asking how I'd been doing instead. I couldn't shake off the thought, what were the Elreds trying to keep out? It felt like they feared something more than a simple break-in, and it didn't sit well with me. As evening approached, I noticed Sapphire's mother watching me with an unusual nervous energy. This whole experience sounds just so creepy. Well, like, I feel like- bad for him because he was like, I'm excited to get out of town and like get away from my life and then steps into this.
You know, this is a screenplay for a movie.
It is, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it says she had the nervous energy. She was devout, but that night something about her seemed off. Approaching me cautiously, she spoke in a low voice as if someone might be listening. Tonight, whatever you do, she whispered, don't open the door. I stepped back and asked why. She glanced over her shoulder. There's something coming. I can feel it. It wants my son. Before I could learn more, she gave me a grave look and walked away. Although it rattled me, I chalked it up to superstition and simply decided to respect her request. As creepy as that was, I'd be like, whatever, lady. Later, I got ready to sleep in the small front bedroom with Saphir's brother. We each had a sleeping bag on the floor. His mother insisted he sleep against the far wall and that I stay near the door with the lights on. I assumed he might be afraid of the dark and didn't question it. By 10 o'clock, he was sound asleep and I soon followed. I woke up abruptly to a metallic rattling. My heart pounded as I checked the time, just after 3:30 a.m. The rattling was coming from the front door, metal jiggling and scraping as though a violent wind was trying to pry it open. My first thought was it was a storm, but the more I listened, the more deliberate it sounded. Someone or something was trying to get in. Peeking out the bedroom window, I expected to see a shadowy figure on the porch, but there was no one. The rattling intensified, followed by the chilling click of the deadbolt sliding open. I held my breath. The iron security door groaned as it swung outward, crashing against the exterior wall with a loud clang. Then the interior door handle jiggled, twisting back and forth. Just like the front door, the deadbolt clicked open and the door flew wide. I expected a rush of cold air or some visible intruder, but there was nothing, only the pitch black night. Then I heard it, a low guttural growl that resonated through the room like a vibration. More human than animal, seething with menace. Ooh, there's another word I don't like, seething. Mm. My body froze. I watched the open doorway, certain something dreadful was about to appear. Suddenly, a figure dashed across the living room from the kitchen. It was a thin man, quick on his feet. Even without my glasses, I recognized him, Saphir's grandfather. He sprang to the door, slammed it shut, and locked both layers in a practiced, urgent motion. Before I could process this, a thunderous crash came from the kitchen. The back doors were under the same assault, locks clicking open, doors slamming back, that menacing growl echoing through the house. The white-haired figure raced toward the kitchen, and I heard him wrestle the back door shut as metal locks snapped back into place. I called out to him, but there was no reply. Then it was silent, an oppressive stillness. No one stirred. It was as if the entire house had slept through the chaos. Shaken, I stood there for what felt like hours, though it was probably just a few minutes, and eventually exhaustion forced me back into a restless sleep. By morning, it all felt like a dream. During breakfast, I asked if anyone else had heard the commotion last night, and I was met with blank stares. Everyone claimed to have slept soundly. I turned to the grandfather, who was sitting at the table sipping apple juice with a walker by his side. I said, "Hey, I saw you last night locking the doors after they flew open. That was terrifying. What on earth happened?" He looked puzzled. "Son, I didn't get out of bed last night. I can barely walk, let alone run around. Do you see this walker?" My stomach dropped. I had watched him struggle just to sit upright earlier. There was no way he could have sprinted through the house the way I'd seen. Suddenly, I felt ice cold and had to step outside to clear my head. Later, I told Saphir's mother what I had witnessed. She sighed in relief and said quietly, "I knew they would come last night." "Before we left to visit, I had a dream about two demons trying to attack my son. I believe you were the only one strong enough to protect him, but I didn't want to scare you or sound crazy, so I held back the details. That's why we came, to get Carly and Amy out of this place. The Elreds have stirred up something dark with their basement rituals. This isn't a fit home for any child." We packed our things and left Hamilton Fort that afternoon As our van pulled away, I glanced back at the iron door. It stood there in the daylight, still and solid, revealing no hint of the darkness it had let in just hours before. I never went back, and from that moment, I never doubted the existence of forces beyond our everyday understanding. Even now, a single question still haunts me. Who was the white-haired man? Best wishes, love and light, Mr. Beard. So that's a lot of story.
Hmm. It's, you know, I think it's a movie is what I think it is. I mean, I'm not saying it didn't happen, but I think it would be a great movie. Because you can have this creepy family.
Well, in the way Mr. Beard wrote it.
Yeah, but, you know, you could have this creepy family that, you know, is doing this. And then you go to save these people.
There is that fine line, like, between religion and the paranormal. You know, they're calling mm-hmm. on spirits and things.
You can cross it.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think about... Okay, let's go straight to the question, okay? Number one, what do you think was trying to get in?
Well, I don't know. Sapphire's mom was like thinking there was something coming after her child.
Mm-hmm.
And if it was something coming after her child, which kind of sounds like maybe... What the heck was that? Like, and why? Why would she feel like something's coming after her child?
Right.
And so was that the child he was in the room with?
That's what the way I took it, you know.
Which I don't like that. You get this creepy feeling that something's going to, like, don't open the door in the middle of the night. But sleep with my son in that room, because that's who I think they're coming for.
Like, yeah, and I knew I wanted you to protect him.
Mr. Beard just wanted to get away from high school and shit.
Well, okay, what I don't, I guess just some sort of dark evil force is trying to take the children is, I guess, all we know about this. But the door seems to be able to stop it. So whoever, do you think it was the grandfather? That is somehow able to, you know.
Or is it something that is, I mean, doppelganging the grandfather?
Yeah.
I've never used it in that way.
It sounds kind of awful, Carol, I have to say.
He's doppelganging him. Like, but he is a doppelganger of the grandfather, maybe?
Yeah.
Doppelganged him? I don't know. I'm using it in all kinds of different adjectives and verbs and shit.
But why did, and seriously, did no one else hear this? Really? Or y'all just acting like you didn't?
You know, I would think if someone did, like his friend Sapphire, she would have said something down the road like, hey, now that we're out of there, I really did hear something that night.
I mean,
so I don't know. Or was it all like a dream? Did he just dream the whole thing and none of it even happened?
Yeah. And somehow he was able.
But then the mom seems to think something and came for, you know.
True.
So the mom's into it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Wow. You know, I just can't imagine sleeping and then like hearing something outside and then that deadbolt opening.
Well, yeah.
Oh.
But it's just so weird.
That's horrifying.
But the Allreds, you know, they were super protected. You know, they had, or the Allreds, excuse me, because they had, you know, the locks and the double doors and all this stuff going on so nobody could get in. And this supposedly was a community that didn't lock their doors. And the Allreds are all like in up in their basement.
But it doesn't seem like it's. It really, but it's weird because it seemed to be able to unlock the doors, get in through the first set, and then go to the second, and then all Grandpa has to do is shut the door. And then that seemed, and relock it, and that was enough to keep him out.
And what, why if they didn't, if they got in, why didn't they attack the brother or the son?
Well, apparently they didn't get in. because he was running around shutting the doors.
Going on with the grandpa looking guy.
It's weird. I just am like, why would the doors keep this thing out when it could obviously unlock them?
But maybe the Elreds, you know, maybe they do know what they're doing and they know they're dealing with some dark stuff. And so they're calling in on, you know, reinforcements in the basement. And maybe the white-haired man was some sort of reinforcement from the Elreds. Maybe they're not so crazy. Maybe they're like just protecting themselves because they desperately need it.
Well, yeah, apparently.
And what was the relationship between the Elreds and, like, how did poor Mr. Beard end up at that house? Like, I have questions, Mr. Beard. Mm-hmm. So maybe he can fill us back in.
Yeah.
It was interesting, though.
What I have is questions. What I don't have is answers.
Because I ain't got a clue. Yeah. But all I do know is I would hate for that shit to happen.
God.
Golly.
That's horrifying.
Okay, well, let's go to this caller.
Hi, guys. This is Angela Ruman, and I left a message once before. It was a different, you know, situation. Like I said, I grew up in New York, but I live in Georgia right now. And my other story was not related to this one, but it does have to do with my father, who was in my other stories. We lived in a house that we had experiences in when, you know, I grew up in New York. But later on, you know, obviously I moved and I'm living in Georgia right now. And 2 years ago, well, in September, it'll be 2 years that I lost my father. And I was very close to my father and I just loved him to death. And I was daddy's little girl. And I was very, I'm still not really like over it. But a short while, he lived in Florida. My parents had retired to Florida. So everything took place in Florida. And when I came back from his, you know, funeral and everything, I still have, my father was very sick for a while and he had to spend some time in a nursing home. And we thought that he was going to get better and be able to come home. And I had actually spoken to him on the phone one day. And, you know, I kept it brief because I didn't like to make him talk a lot. He had issues with his lungs and it was hard for him to speak. So I didn't speak as long as I probably would have liked. But I do remember, you know, saying, I love you. And, you know, his thing was always like, I'll see you soon, sunshine. And, you know, that evening, he passed away. And my sister called me to tell me that, you know, he had been found unresponsive in his bed and they were trying to do everything they could. But then they advised us that, you know, he had passed away. So I never really got over that. That's kind of something that has lived with me since it happened, wondering, like, what happened, because I spoke to him earlier in the day. Was he okay? Did he suffer? You know, was somebody, you know, neglectful? I mean, I just, because I wasn't there and I couldn't see it and I couldn't, you know what happened, I've always had this thing that I lost him and I don't know what happened to him. And I still, like, carry that with me. And after, like I said, after I came back to Georgia, after everything, I'm not sure how long after it was, but I was in bed sleeping one evening with my husband, and I remember having this dream, and I wasn't sure if it was actually a dream because I almost thought I was awake. And I remember the room getting really, really cold, so cold that my husband threw the covers over his head to just kind of like keep warm. And then I remember like just being terrified and not wanting to open my eyes, being like almost like frozen with fear because I knew something was there. But then a voice inside of my head said, Ange, it's your dad. You don't have to be afraid of your dad. That's your dad. So I opened my eyes and there he was, and he was smiling, this big burly smile that he always had, that he always gave us. And, you know, he just was, you know, he was a little fuzzy, but it was him and he was smiling. And I felt like he wanted to say something to me, but he wouldn't speak. And I was like, you know, and I was just like, hi, daddy, you know, and I was just kind of like, you know, smiling back. And I just started laughing, actually, because he had this smile that just made me giggle all the time because it was very mischievous. And he's smiling at me just like that. So I started laughing, and he came over to the bed, and my husband was actually on the outer side of the bed. I was sleeping on a side of the bed that at the time was near a wall. So he sat at the edge of the bed, and he just kept smiling at me, and I just kept giggling and laughing. And I woke up, I guess, that morning or later on when my husband got up for work and stuff, and I was telling him, you know, last night, did it get really cold in the room, and did you put the covers over your head? And he couldn't remember if he had or he hadn't, but I asked him because it just felt so real. It felt like it actually happened. And, you know, I just wasn't sure if that was my dad's way of coming back and saying, hey, stop fretting so much and stop, you know, blaming yourself and stop being so, you know, upset. You know, I'm okay. I'm in a better place. I just was never sure, you know. I've had a few dreams with him in it later on, but they were never like that. That just felt very intense, and it was almost like I could feel the cold and I could feel the presence. And, you know, I mean, that's why I asked my husband. I said, did you get really cold last night, you know, in the early, late night, you know, early morning, and did you throw the covers over your head, you know? And, you know, like I said, he couldn't remember if he had or not. My husband's a very deep sleeper, but, you know, I don't know. It just felt really real to me, so I just wanted to share that. So thanks a lot for listening. Bye-bye.
So don't you think that was her father coming to visit her?
I absolutely do. And I don't think it matters whether it was in a dream or not. I think exactly. He came to visit her.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do I think it was a dream or not a dream? I think it was not a dream. I think he really did show up. And I think
he really
did. Because
the temperature
sit on
in the room and all that stuff. Yeah.
And I think he really did sit on the foot of her bed. And for some reason, you know, whatever the situation was, whatever kind of, you know, dimension he's in, he was not able to speak directly to her. But he could smile at her. And, you know, I can see my dad pulling that same thing.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, if he's going to come to me, he's going to sit on the foot of my bed, and he's going to just grin at me. You know, I absolutely think, personally, I think it was real. That's what I'm going with. I don't think it was a dream. I don't think it matters if it was a dream or not. I think it was still your dad reaching out to connect with you. But I have a feeling he was really there.
I do too. And I just find those kinds of stories to be so beautiful.
Me too.
I just love them.
That one was really good. But to me, the giveaway is like what you said, that the room turned cold.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've never heard anybody in a dream say that.
That's what makes it different. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a good story. Touch my heart. So if you have a real ghost story, if you want to call it in, the number is 855-853-4802 or write it in at realghoststoriesonline.com. Become a premium subscriber if you want. You get advanced episodes, access to the archive, no commercials. Sign up today through Apple Podcasts or go to patreon.com/realghoststories or ghostpodcast.com. And for all of us here at Real Ghost Stories Online, thank you for listening.